Before Hurricane Stan struck the Central American coast last Tuesday, forecasters were calling for 5 to 15 inches of rain. Almost 30 inches fell in some areas of Guatemala, highlighting the difficulty of hurricane-related forecasts. We're going to talk about the art, the science, and the politics of predicting hurricanes and what it will take to do a better job. If you have ideas or questions, give us a call. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now is Debbie Sensiper, a reporter for the Miami Herald. Her paper conducted an 8-month investigation into the National Hurricane Center and whether U.S. agencies could better predict the location and intensities of hurricanes at landfall. She joins us from the studios at the Miami Herald, and it's good to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Good to be here.
It seems in recent years the track of hurricane predictions has actually been pretty good. What's the problem?
Well, I think what's happening is that at critical times, there's basic equipment that's not available to forecasters. Things like buoys and weather balloons and specially equipped hurricane hunter planes. And that's affected them as storms were making landfall.
Can you give me a for instance?
Sure. During Hurricane Katrina, as the storm was strengthening in the Atlantic, the Hurricane Center opted, because of budget problems, to only fly their Gulfstream jet one time before the storm hit South Florida. And on that flight, there was a computer crash, so valuable information never made it to forecasters or their computer models. And some people believe that potentially affected the forecast in South Florida.
And we, of course, remember what Katrina did in Louisiana and Mississippi, but South Florida suffered some severe damage as well.
That's right. In fact, at landfall, the storm dipped deep into Miami-Dade County. A lot of people weren't expecting that.
Another factor that your series highlights is difficulties in figuring the intensity of storms. And the example you used there was Hurricane Charley, which hit Florida last year.
That's right. It was the strongest storm to hit Florida since Andrew in 92. And what we found is that as Charley was approaching Florida, three coastal weather observing stations along the coast weren't working. They were malfunctioning. Two planes that the Hurricane Center uses to measure wind speeds at the surface of a storm were unavailable because the government had sent them on unrelated research missions. Weather balloons were not launched, in the Caribbean as the storm was approaching Florida. So, yeah, there were a number of things that were down. At that time.
When you talk about those are the famous hurricane hunter planes.
That's right. There are planes flown by the U.S. Air, the reserves, and then NOAA, the federal government, has three planes, one jet that flies in the environment around a storm, and two turboprop planes, all specially equipped, all with equipment that's not on the Air Force planes. Mm-hmm. And often those planes are not available either because they're diverted for unrelated research missions, or because the Hurricane Center is worried about breaking the bank. They only get, a certain number of flight hours every year.
And obviously, this can lead not only to errors of, like Charley, which hit in a different place and was rather stronger than some anticipated, though the Weather Service will say it was within the cone of where it was predicted to be, but it can also lead to the crying wolf storms where everybody says evacuate and then it turns out not to be so big.
Yeah. In fact, in today's Miami Herald, we have a story on that exact issue. It's kind of controversial. The Hurricane Center, their mission is to save lives. They don't want to do anything that's going to jeopardize, people and property. But what's happening is at times to cover uncertainties in their forecasting, the warnings can be hundreds of miles long. And so some people are worried that eventually, perhaps it hasn't happened yet, but that eventually people are going to start worrying, people are going to start ignoring those warnings.
If you have questions about how hurricanes are tracked and predicted, give us a call at 800-989-8255. Email us, totn@npr.org. We'd also like to hear from those of you who were affected by unanticipatedly strong storms or who evacuated only to find that there was a mild breeze that followed. I'm Neil Conan. Back after the break, it's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today about tracking hurricanes and the difficulties of doing so, especially when the budget of the agencies that's tasked with that to perform that deed has held steady for many years. Our guest is Debbie Sensiper, a reporter for the Miami Herald. That newspaper has conducted an 8-month investigation into every hurricane that's struck land since Hurricane Andrew 13 years ago. And Debbie, talk to us a little bit about this funding problem. How much money does the government spend on the National Hurricane Center?
You know, I didn't really get into the Hurricane Center's operating budget, but I do know that the number of forecasters at the Hurricane Center has not grown in years, even though, you know, we are dealing with busier, you know, more active hurricane seasons. What I dealt with was the equipment, and that's not maintained by the Hurricane Center. It's maintained by the National Weather Service and NOAA. And so we kind of looked at trends with the equipment and what they've put money into and what they haven't over time.
Talk to us a little bit about how the Hurricane Center relates to those two other services you were talking about, the National Weather Service and NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Agency.
Sure. NOAA, it's the Department of Commerce. That's kind of the umbrella agency. NOAA is within the Department of Commerce. The Weather Service reports to NOAA, and the Hurricane Center reports to the Weather Service.
And the Weather Service is responsible for maintaining some of this equipment out in the field, if you will. These are buoys, and these are often dropped buoys that you say malfunction a lot.
Yeah, they're not dropped, they're moored buoys. And what happens is, first of all, it's hard when they break, or a ship, you know, they're hit by a ship, or for whatever reason they malfunction, it's hard to get out there, you know, they're in the ocean. And so delays can take a long time. So what we found is even during the hurricane season, buoys have been broken at crucial times. And you know, there's just not a lot of money to maintain them. The Weather Service waits for free rides from the Coast Guard instead of maybe chartering a ship or, you know, getting out there more quickly. So it's really just an issue of money and priorities.
One of the biggest improvements over the past few years is a radar, a Doppler radar that's much more effective than previous systems.
That's right, yeah. In fact, Congress spent a lot of money in the 1990s to upgrade the nation's radars. In fact, they spent more than $1 billion to do this. But what's happening at some radars, in fact, it happened twice in Miami last summer, is, you know, the radars are getting hit, they're getting struck by lightning, and it's disabling them at critical times. So there is a plan to install fiber optic wiring, cabling on the radars, which would help better protect them. But it's $3.5 million, and so far the Weather Service hasn't come up with the money.
Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. Again, 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. Jim is on the line. Jim from Pensacola, Florida.
Good afternoon. I enjoy your program, Neil, very much.
Thank you.
While listening to Debbie describe some of the deficiencies within the budget, I'm trying to figure out, you know, to what extent that has affected, if at all, our subject to making decisions for evacuating or preparing for, you know, for hurricanes. It just seems to me, as being a Floridian, a native Floridian, that we have ample notice, ample warning, and a tremendous, you know, system in terms of advancing information regarding these hurricanes. And to suggest that our response to that could be better with more money, I just don't see it.
Debbie, do you have examples of how it might be better with more money? What's the problem, I think, as Jim is asking?
Sure. I mean, it's happened, you know, time and time again in recent years, and in fact dating back to Andrew in 92, where lapses in basic equipment potentially affected forecasts. Like I said, during Charley last year, they anticipated a Category 2 hurricane. It turned into a Category 4, caught a lot of people by surprise. It shifted east at the last minute. Again, catching people by surprise, and there was a whole bunch of equipment out at that moment. So nobody is suggesting that the Hurricane Center is not doing a good job. They are, you know, among some of the best meteorologists in the country. The question is, could they be doing it better if they had what they needed? And forecasters all over at the Weather Service offices all over the East Coast talk about these problems.
Let's bring another voice in on this question. Joining us now is Mike Black. He's a research meteorologist at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and he's also joins us from the studios at the Miami Herald. And, Mike, good to have you on the program.
Good afternoon, Neil.
I was wondering if you could address Jim's question. What difference does it make? The warnings seem to be timely and accurate.
Well, I share the his sentiments. I think overall the forecasts are superb. The Hurricane Center does an excellent job. But as Debbie points out, could they do better? And I think the question to that is absolutely. And I think the Hurricane Center would be the first to admit that, and they're always striving to do better. And it's not only the equipment. There's some question on any individual case of what equipment, how much it would affect it. And you basically don't know because it wasn't available, so you can't go back and see what difference a forecast would make. But there's the other areas, and particularly research that I'm involved in, that can help the forecast. Could these sudden shifts, these turns to the east like Charlie did, or to the south like Katrina did in South Florida, could they be better anticipated? Personally, I believe they can. It's going to take more research. It's going to take next generations of models that NOAA is working on, but frankly does not have the resources to accelerate that program. And so the outcome of that is in doubt right now. So I think we could do better, and certainly that should be the goal of NOAA, to get the best possible forecast out there for the American public.
So these research projects on hurricanes, they are being starved of funding, you're saying?
Yes, certainly some of them. I work for the Hurricane Research Division. Here on Virginia Key in Miami, we're part of another laboratory, the Atlantic Oceanographic and Meteorological Laboratory of NOAA. And we were designated by Congress back in the 1950s as a national laboratory to specifically study hurricanes and to improve the forecast. Over the last two decades or so, our budget, the amount of dollars we get every year, a steady income, has remained essentially flat. And so inflation and rising costs have taken their toll. And what the net result is that our staff has dwindled, and we're no longer able to really fully do our mission anymore, which is to advance the science of hurricane forecasting, help out the Hurricane Center in any way we possibly can. And it has come problems. I think we can do a lot better than that. We're keying in on three areas of research that's been mentioned here already. Is one is intensity. We have very little skill in predicting how strong storms are going to be when they make landfall. There have been great strides made in track forecasting, and you've seen that this year with the excellent forecasts that were made in for Katrina, in particular for the Louisiana-Mississippi landfall. And then the last is rainfall, and that you mentioned at the beginning of the show, talking mm-hmm. about Hurricane Stan and the devastating effects in Central America. And that we've barely scratched the surface, as my boss, Frank Marks, the director of the Hurricane Research Division, has said. There's a lot more that we can do, but we simply don't have the funding, the staff, to be able to analyze the data, to look into the details and provide the science that's needed.
Jim, does that answer your question? I think Jim's left us. Anyway, thank him for his call. By the way, we should mention that we have invited representatives from NOAA and the National Weather Service to join us today. They declined to do so. Let's get another caller on the line. And this is John, and John's calling from Doylestown, Pennsylvania.
Yes, hi. Hi, Debbie. I was wondering if Debbie could talk about the relationship between data gathering and the computer model and the computer program, because I think a lot of people don't understand that the model and the program are both highly dependent on data gathering. And the more data points you have, the more accurate it can be.
That's right. I'm not a meteorologist or an expert, but I'm going to let Mike answer that. But from what I've been told, when there are gaps in the data, when there are gaps in weather balloon data and drop wind sond data, that can affect the computer models.
Drop wind sonds? What are those?
Drop wind sonds are released from hurricane hunter planes into the depths of storms, and they provide all kinds of data that feed into the computer models. And the failure rate of drop wind sonds in the last few years has been about 50%. They're failing at the surface of a storm. So that's, information that's denied to the computer models.
Mike Black, maybe you can give us a little bit more on the relationship between the amount of data available and the accuracy of the tracking and intensity.
Well, a computer model is only as good as the data that goes into it. And the Weather Service uses some of the most sophisticated computer models in the world, both to track the atmosphere as a whole, as well as they have a few very limited models of hurricanes. NOAA is working very hard on a next generation hurricane model to specifically simulate the actual conditions of a hurricane. That means the rainfall and wind patterns that we actually observe. For that, you need accurate observations. But it's more than that. You need a way to get it into the model. You can't just simply throw a bunch of numbers into a computer model and expect the computer model to spit out the right answer. It's a very complicated science of data assimilation to get the data correctly into the models. You actually can make a model forecast worse by putting in additional data. So this has to be done in a stepwise fashion and done very carefully. We've proven we have a very good track record with the NOAA G4 jet that NOAA purchased back in 1997, became operational then. And releasing these drop-wind sondes in the environment of storms, the steering currents. And that data is fed into models. And at the Hurricane Research Division, we have a Dr. Sim Aberson, who's working with the Environmental Prediction Center in Washington, D.C., on this idea of data assimilation in targeting specific regions of the atmosphere that are most sensitive to changes, and that would help better predict the course of the hurricane. And it's made huge differences in the forecast of the track of hurricanes, something on the order of 20%.
And yet, the National Hurricane Center points out that virtually every hurricane, including Charlie, which we talked about earlier, did make landfall within their warning zone. They also say that there's overlap in their system, so that one malfunctioning radar or buoy here or there shouldn't make that much difference.
Yeah, I think the question is, you know, if your warning areas are large, how do you miss? And that's kind of what we point out in today's story, that, you know, if their forecasts were more precise, if they had more confidence in their forecasts, perhaps they could narrow down the size of the warnings.
We're talking about predicting hurricanes and difficulties caused by old and malfunctioning equipment and, some say, underfunding at the National Hurricane Center in Miami. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get, John, by the way, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Bill. Bill's with us from San Diego.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I work at the Scripps Institution of Oceanography, and one of the things we do is we do deploy buoys to do research for, to add more information to improve the data prediction models. And I've actually... I haven't spoken with Peter before, Mr. Black, but I've seen his name around. And one of the things that we encounter is that, you know, the hurricane tracking predictions is pretty good, and there's the hurricane intensities is even in the best of times when all the equipment's working and there's no malfunctions. It's a difficult problem. It's not the basic research hasn't been done to allow for a real accurate prediction of the intensity. And one of the problems that we run into is that it's difficult to get data. The storms, like, for example, we put drifting buoys in the water. And to get them in front of a hurricane, we air deploy them with the Air Force. And to put 20 buoys in the water, we cost us about $300,000. To build the buoys, get them on a plane, rig them with parachutes, and put them in. And so that's 20 data points, and you have a storm that's, you know, hundreds of miles across. It's not a lot of information. So it's expensive to get data. It's a big ocean, you know. So that's just one of the...
Mike Black, do these difficulties sound familiar?
Oh, very much so. And, Bill, I think we may have actually met at some time. Very familiar with the work there at Scripps. In fact, we have partnered with Scripps on this very thing he's talking about of deploying ocean and atmospheric probes, having the Air Force do that as a service for the research community at large, both NOAA and the Office of Naval Research, as well as institutions like Scripps. And he's right, it is a very expensive proposition, but it's invaluable. And he's also correct in stating that the hurricane problem, the prediction, the predictability of hurricanes is a very complex problem that involves not only all scales within the atmosphere, but involves directly knowing what the ocean conditions are like, and not just at the surface, but beneath the surface as well. And there's been a lot of emphasis in the last several years, not only by NOAA, but by university and other governmental agencies, into the ocean portion of the problem. And there's been some advances made, but not nearly enough. I think the Herald pointed out correctly that we at the Hurricane Research Division are using donated devices from the Navy that are 20 years old, but are not supposed to be working, but in fact still do. And we're leasing them from our NOAA aircraft to measure the upper ocean. And we'd love to be able to get that data in real time to the forecasters, and we simply don't have the financial support to do so.
Bill, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And Mike Black, before we let you go, I do have to ask a question. You work at NOAA. NOAA representatives, again, declined to join us today, but why are you talking to the Miami Herald and to us? Aren't you afraid of losing your job?
I hope NOAA would... wouldn't consider that as an option. I'm able to speak to you primarily because not only am I a public servant, first and foremost, as a meteorologist with the Hurricane Research Division of NOAA, but I'm also union steward of the National Weather Service Employees Organization here in Miami. And that allows me the freedom, it's a right and a freedom to speak with press, to speak with other governmental officials, where other non-union members may not be able to do so. And I felt that this was an important enough issue. I've been doing this for 20 years. I feel the work that we do, and I mean NOAA as a whole, I'm very proud to be a NOAA employee, is valuable to the country, and that these problems need to be brought out so that they can be corrected.
Mike Black, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Mike Black is a research meteorologist at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and he joined us from the studios at the Miami Herald. We'll continue to take your call as we switch the focus on maybe to the politics of hurricane prediction when we come back from a short break. We'll also be talking more about Saturday's referendum in Iraq. We'll go to Kurdistan. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Today we're talking about how to predict hurricanes and whether we can do it better. Still with us is Debbie Sensiper, a reporter at the Miami Herald. If you've joined us late, we're talking about that newspaper's 8-month-long investigation into every hurricane that's made landfall since Hurricane Andrew 13 years ago. If you're interested, you can still join us as we now switch to the politics of this question. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can email us, TOTN@NPR.org. And Debbie, what's the reaction in Congress to the complaints from the Hurricane Center that it's been underfunded?
Well, I think that's kind of an interesting point you raised. These problems have been going on for years, but this hasn't really bubbled up very often to Congress. I interviewed every Hurricane Center director going back to Robert Simpson in the 1970s, and they all talk about a culture of fear within the agency, that they've been told they're really not allowed to be talking publicly about these things. They're not, of course, allowed to lobby Congress, and they've talked about gaps in research and gaps in equipment kind of privately for a long time, but not a lot has been said publicly.
I can imagine that there's scarcely a federal agency anywhere that does not talk about gaps in funding at this point.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, and I think that that's a good point. But it's not just a question of funding. It's a question of priorities, and the other issue is it's not going to take a lot of money to fix this problem. That's what people in the Hurricane Center and at Weather Service field offices talk about, is if you really add it all up, it's not a very expensive problem to fix.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Lawrence. Lawrence calling us from Philadelphia.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
My question has to do with one particular legislator's take on the National Weather Service and the Hurricane Center, and that legislator is our Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum. He's a very powerful senator, and he, a couple of months ago, proposed S-813, which is a bill which would prevent the National Weather Service from disseminating its information for free to the public wherever there was a private company that wanted to disseminate that. And here in Pennsylvania, the biggest private company in that business is AccuWeather of State College, Pennsylvania. I can understand Senator Santorum's wanting to protect and enhance jobs at AccuWeather, but I personally have relatives in Florida and use the National Hurricane Center's website quite frequently. It provides a number of prediction tools and graphics that have been very, very helpful to me. And I wondered if your reporter had any information about the ways in which the National Hurricane Center would be affected if its outlet for information to the public were to be shut down by Senator Santorum's bill.
Debbie Sensiber?
Yeah, I'm very aware of that bill, and we tried to stay away from that a little bit in this project. One, because I don't think the bill has generated much support in Congress, and it's real controversial. I mean, Senator Bill Nelson in Florida is absolutely opposed to it. People are worried that basically they'd be paying for weather predictions that they can now get for free from the Weather Service. So we tried to stay away from that. We focused mostly on research, equipment, support from Washington.
Lawrence, thanks for the call.
Thank you very much.
And let's see if we can talk with Mariel. Excuse me. Mariel is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Yes. I think it's really important that the American public have a decent understanding of the procedures for funding the Hurricane Centers, the people who do the work and the equipment that needs to be used. Because if it's not evaluated by scientists, then the decisions for funding are going to be made by hacks and politicians. I just think it's critically important that the American people understand the process for getting funding for these very vital agencies.
Well, how does the process work, Debbie?
You know, it's kind of a gray area. I mean, we pointed out in yesterday's Miami Herald that researchers have kind of been asking informally for years for more money, but it's, you know, Congress doesn't necessarily know that because the research or the funding requests kind of have to bubble up through the agency. And so nobody really knows publicly how much, say, the Hurricane Research Division has been asking for years. NOAA kind of makes the call on what they want to submit to the president and to Congress. And it's kind of hard to track how, you know, what the agencies are actually asking for.
What agencies are they bubbling up through?
They bubble up, well, I mean, they bubble up through NOAA. That's kind of the umbrella agency. And NOAA, officials within NOAA, make the call on what budgets they want to support and what, you know, what they want to request, what projects they want to...
And what, again, is the definition for NOAA?
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Well, I don't understand why they would not want this money to be allocated that's necessary for the safety of the American public.
Yeah, that's what their own forecasters are saying, the exact same thing.
Well, are there too many politicians and not enough scientists? And NOAA?
You know, no, it's a big agency. I can't answer that question.
Well, it seems to me somebody's values are screwed. They're not meeting the needs of the public.
Yeah, in fact, one point that we made in Sunday's Herald is that administrative costs for NOAA just in the last year have grown tremendously. And the Weather Service, which oversees the Hurricane Center and forecasting offices all over the country, had to cut almost $40 million from its budget. And that meant, you know, equipment would not be repaired as quickly. Training for forecasters, a lot of that was cut while NOAA's overhead basically grew. So, yeah.
And it sounds like scientists aren't the most important people there. It's really a bureaucracy that lives to feed itself.
Mariel, thanks very much
for
the call. We appreciate it. And Debbie Sensiber, if people were interested in reading this series, they're on the website at the Miami Herald?
Yeah, herald.com. It's, every day is posted on the website.
Debbie Sensiber, thanks very much, and good luck with the series.
Thanks so much.
Debbie Sensiber is a reporter for the Miami Herald. She joined us from the studios at her newspaper. By the way, if there is going to be another Atlantic tropical storm this year, it will be named Wilma. Then the National Hurricane Center will switch to Greek names, beginning with the Greek alphabet, Alpha, Beta, Gamma, and thus forth. Hope we don't get to Omega. By the way, we did invite representatives of the National Weather Service and NOAA to join us at this program, and they declined.